Hi, attainable listeners. Today, we are speaking with Marina McCoy, a sustainable events consultant from the beautiful state of Vermont. Marina founded her sustainable consulting business, Waste Free Earth, 2 years ago, but she has been in the industry creating impact since college. She works across the country for small events and large-scale festivals, where her main mission is to educate and engage with guests and attendees while focusing on creating sustainable systems that reduce waste and increase reusable resources on site at each event. Marina is also starting to plan sustainable weddings for any of you brides-to-be. Marina talks to us about how she first got started, what it's like traveling cross-country to work gigs in her van. She talks about the sustainable changes she's seen in the events industry, and she even shares some of her late-night guilty pleasures while on the road. Marina is a pleasure to speak with and is super knowledgeable, an expert when it comes to sustainability and events. I'm ready to learn more. Let's go. Marina.
Hello, Amy. Thank you for having me. I'm super excited about this interview.
Thank you so much for joining us. We want to hear about all of the things you're doing, but let's start touching on what was the moment where you really wanted to engage your lifestyle around resources that you're using and things you're bringing into your life? And were you really wanting to help our planet? Were you excited about changing your lifestyle and trying different things? Where did zero waste come into your life?
How I got into the zero waste movement and starting my company, Waste Free Earth. My aha moment, I was a sophomore in college. I was back for summer break and I switched my degree over to sustainability. And I thought by that, it meant I was super sustainable when really I wasn't. I was a hypocrite just because I was saying sustainability didn't actually mean that I was making any change. And I would go to this festival called the Friendly Gathering, which is near my hometown in southern Vermont. I'm from Rutland. It was about like an hour south. And I would go every year. It was my only festival I would go to. I would go there with my friends because it was kind of like a high school reunion. Everyone's back for the summertime. We all meet there. It's super easy. And we had a great time. And one night it was super rainy out. And there was all... like everything was muddy and there's these glow sticks that were just being submerged into the mud, just being sucked up by the earth. And we were walking back and this group of girls were making comments about how bad the glow sticks were for the environment and all this stuff. They didn't pick any up, but they commented on it. And in my head, I was like, oh yeah, like F those glow sticks. And of course, I didn't pick any up at that time either. And went back to my tent and realized my tent was glowing, even though I had no lights on. And I looked myself up and down and realized I had glow sticks from my head, literally all the way down to my ankles, like made sure that every part, you know, I at least had a glow stick on like one hand and the other one, and then one ankle, all that stuff. And I also had glow paint. And that was my aha moment that I was a hypocrite. I brought like the red Solo cups with me, which there's really no need. I could have just bought a reusable cup, but because of the party scene, Red Solo Cup makes a huge scene there, or presence per se. Had that, I had all these chip bags, pita chips, hummus. I just couldn't stop seeing the plastic. And then I would go out into the field where the music was playing. There was plastic everywhere. And the bands were playing songs about, not all of them, but phrasing about community and the environment. And I just noticed this huge disconnect that we were here to create this awesome community, but yet we're destroying it at the same time because we're leaving such an impact on the environment in terms of waste and even just destroying the ground because it was all muddy and with thousands of people on it. It wasn't good. And from that moment, I became super fascinated by waste. I went home, I started going on YouTube, researching different types of channels and articles, case studies. I dedicated my whole junior year to doing case studies on myself of how I could live more plastic free. Started collecting my waste, got introduced to Beth Terry from my plastic free life, not in person. Well, I guess I met her later on in person, but saw her TED talk on plastic free living.
Yes.
Yeah.
I will post that TED talk in the show notes. That's such a good one.
Yes. It's amazing. And she was kind of my pioneer. And I think just with the movement in general, she just is really, really reachable and relatable. I like that part of her. And then ironically, she was coming to Tahoe where I was going to school and was giving a talk at the library. So I had to go there. And even though I saw her TED talk and the talks are kind of similar, I got to see in real life and like on the projector, the photos of the birds. They call it Bird Island, and they all ingested the plastic. And so their stomachs exploded and ended up killing them because they weren't ingesting food. It was plastic, so they weren't completely digesting it. And it was all like bottle caps and things that are in our everyday life that we produce, because climate change, I think, is really hard for people to understand because you can't really see the greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. But that's when I was like, oh, crap. Like, my actions really are making a difference in a negative way. And I went back to my house and did like a whole plastic audit and wanted to make change on a bigger level too. And so I reached out to Friendly Gathering that year and told them that I'm studying sustainability and I would love to be a part of their festival. And they're like, we have no money to pay you, but you could be a rock star volunteer. So I said, sign me up. And I was a rock star volunteer, and everything made sense while I was there. We were sorting through the waste. I got to see, I always call it a waste audit, because we're going through and I could see the different types of waste that are coming through the stream, where we might need to educate more on an attendee aspect and a staff and vendor aspect, and actually get to see like, hey, we just sorted through 50 yards of waste and 30 of it is now going into recycling instead of the dumpster. And they just ended up paying me that year, and I was with them for 5 years. They took a hiatus this year, but from that moment on, I just became super fascinated with being able to reach thousands of people at once and inspire change with living out my values in my everyday life as well. It's a nice full circle that it came all the way back to Friendly Gathering, where I had my aha moment, and then I got to create change with them, and they became one of like the most sustainable festivals that I've worked with. They gave me a lot of creative freedom, and each year we just got better and better and better, and I'm really proud with how it came up and feel really honored that they allowed us. I was 19 years old at the time.
So you were still in college when you approached them?
Mm-hmm.
Initially?
Yeah, it was my junior year.
I had a similar aha moment. We buy health-focused food and snacks, and you think they're healthy, and because they're healthy, that should be good for our bodies and good for the environment, made with natural products. But you say you saw what it was packaged in, and it was plastic or it was non-recyclable packaging. When we look and walk into a store, even health food store, the packaging is really still such an issue. And that's become such a norm and a cheap way to package even the healthiest of foods and organic foods even. It's all around us.
It is. But that's a tough thing, is food packaging. I'm so, so fortunate to live in Vermont, where most of my food comes within a 40-mile radius, and it's not heavily packaged at all, because I live zero waste. For people that don't have the accessibility like I do, it's tough, especially if you're trying to be healthy and you can't get local food, because local food is usually always better than getting those new superfoods that come out, because you're getting it right from the source. It's traveling less, there's less carbon emissions, and there's more nutrients in it as well too, because it doesn't have that long travel time ahead. But it all depends on where you live. Like, I acknowledge my privilege that I'm able to go to my local co-op and get, you know, probably over 80% of my food locally. Like, even my oats, because I make oat milk, comes locally. It's amazing, and I'm very, very thankful.
Where were you shopping before? And are those options even available at the stores were you shopping at before?
The options are definitely very limited. So I would say anyone who, you know, if there's a general grocery store in your town, what I always tell people is to shop the perimeter of the grocery store as much as possible. That's where the produce is. That's where the fruits are and the veggies are. Sometimes, like, more stores are getting bulk sections, but not all of them do. So you want to really, like, focus on the perimeter. And then the baked goods, like, I buy my bread from the bakery at my co-op, and there's usually always a bakery and a grocery store. So you could get that, and they have the fresh bread in paper. So you want to go for that than the plastic ones. You do have to slice it yourself instead of the pre-sliced one, but you don't get it in a plastic bag. Then after you've done the perimeter of it, you kind of also want to focus on, yeah, you might want those organic bananas. And this is what I do all the time. The organic bananas come wrapped in the plastic wrap that says organic all over them. I get generic bananas sometimes because I'm like, I'm not going to get all this plastic wrap for the banana. So I've tried to limit my bananas consumption as well too, because it's, you know, definitely not local in Vermont, but it causes you to buy different sorts of fruits and vegetables that you wouldn't have bought in before once you have this plastic free lens on, because you're seeing the plastic. You're like, okay, I'm not going to buy these zucchinis that are wrapped in plastic. I'm going to go for this type of squash instead. Oh, I'm going to get like the loose leaf Brussels sprouts instead of the packaged potatoes. It's just, it's always, I guess, like, it's always a choice game, I would say. And that, to me, it's really opened my eyes to different types of cooking. And I live on my van, so I'm really just stir frying. So if I can like make these little choices with my limited amount of resources to make food, hopefully a little bit more attainable or reachable. And then I would go into, there's choices that you can make if you don't have a bulk section near you, or if you have a grocery store that packages a lot of stuff. You really want to go for the products packaged in cardboard, glass, aluminum, and metal. So those are the three ones that I would suggest for people that might not have access to a co-op type or bulk store, because you could get pasta sauce in a glass container. You could get olives and sun-dried tomatoes, all that stuff, all in aluminum cans. And you could also get pasta in a cardboard container. There's all those options there, and those are all highly recyclable products too. So try to go for that and the last resort with plastic, but take your time when you're transitioning to a more plastic-free, zero-waste type lifestyle. Do what you can, but don't stress yourself out the first shopping trip. Just take note of what you're consuming and then say, okay, next week I won't buy tortillas. I miss tortillas so much. But I'll have them when I go out to eat to get tacos, but it's just, I couldn't find any tortillas that don't come wrapped in plastic. So that's out of my diet. Same with hummus and pita chips and pita bread. It's turned my whole diet around, but I think for the better, because I feel a lot healthier and I'm not consuming a lot of junk food with added sugars in it. I'm mainly just eating whole food. I love Brussels sprouts with rice. One of my favorite foods, and it's so simple.
Yes. Add a little butter to it. It's great. And yeah. One trick I heard for tortillas, if you have a local Mexican restaurant, you can go and ask for their homemade tortillas. Sometimes Mexican restaurants will buy packaged tortillas and that's what they're heating and selling to you in the dish that you're ordering. But if it's a good restaurant, they will make their own and you can buy 5 or 10 or whatever, and they'll sell them to you as a to-go item in a paper bag. So that's a good trick.
I will definitely have to look into it, because Taco Tuesday nights at friend's house has been really difficult.
Yeah, I can imagine.
To shop for the tortillas.
You brought up a good point just about choices in the grocery stores. There's just so many choices and it's overwhelming before you choose what you're getting. Really look at all the options. More than not, there's always a more sustainable option. A lot of the time I'll look at the label. If there's 2 glass bottle options, I'll see which one is closer. You know, was it produced in the US? Is it produced in a state closer to my state? And make a decision based on that. Mm-hmm. Every little carbon or every gallon of gas that wasn't used to transport it helps.
Exactly. And interesting too, like with the whole organic movement, which I am for as well, but a lot of the local farms in Vermont can't afford their organic certification. So when I'm shopping at my co-op, I'm not really shopping in the organic section because the organic zucchinis are coming from California. I could get the conventional zucchinis where I know the farmers are practicing organic practices that come from 20 miles away. So it's really important to acknowledge that just because it doesn't have the certification that says organic, if you have the time to reach out to the farm, if something's made locally, even if like the pasta sauce is made locally, reach out and ask them because usually they practice those practices. It's just they can't afford the certification or don't want to spend the money in it because, you know, they need to pay their staff. It woke me up when I was in the co-op because at first I was shopping in the organic section. But again, I'm fortunate enough where the co-op puts little tags of like where everything is coming from. And I was in the organic section. I was like, wait, peppers from Chile, they're organic, but they're from Chile. And then zucchini from California and all this other stuff from all over the world, but not Vermont. Then I went over to the conventional side. I was like, oh, here's like Shelburne Farms right here and all of these other farms that I know because my friends work at them. Like, oh, I'm just gonna go here. I know that they're practicing organic practices, but that was a big wake up call for me. If you have the time, do your research and save money too, because the organic stuff is way more expensive.
Quick plug to your lovely van. You travel the country in your van, working events for Waste Free Earth. And talk to us about how you prep for trips like that. And when you do need to shop on the road, what are maybe some challenges that you've had to work through around finding produce or shopping?
My van, I call her Vanny or the Mothership van. I got her in 2016 after I graduated college. And on the side, I was doing, like I said before, sustainability for music festivals, the friendly gatherings, Wintergrass, and Snow Globe. So I had three clients at that time. Didn't really have my company yet. I was just being a sustainability director. Didn't have a name to go under, per se. But I wanted to travel the country and put my name out there more. But I wanted to do it a little bit more sustainably. So I got the van and decked it all out and made a home out of it. Has electricity, a bed, storage, countertop, kitchen, running water.
Congrats,
But
that's
I've been living out
awesome.
of it. Thank you.
Yes.
For 4 years on and off. It's
What fuel type
amazing. And
does it run off of?
it runs off of gas. So it's not diesel. I have a Dodge ProMaster van. I didn't get the Mercedes. It was way out of my price range. As a little plug, is that the more sustainable option sometimes, not sometimes, most likely is more expensive. It's not attainable for a lot of people. I keep on dropping attainable. I like it. I
Yeah, I know,
love
me too.
that your company's name is
Yeah.
attainable. Last year and the year before, I was working so many events where I was flying to, and I just felt like such a hypocrite being a sustainability director for events, but flying to all of them. So this year, I really wanted to cut down on my air travel, and I made a promise to cut it in half, which I successfully did. And working in the event industry, there's so much leftover food waste. So I have so much food in my van, and I try to eat as much as possible, but there's just no way. And I donate as much as I can, but sometimes the food hasn't opened, so we can't donate it. I get overwhelmed when there's waste. We plan so much. Hey, like how many people are going to be eating this day? This, that. We get all the numbers, but still, like things slip through the cracks. Maybe they didn't like the food that day, so they got their own, and we're left with all this food. So that's a challenge. And I try to rescue as much when I'm not food rescuing, when I'm living out of the van and I'm going through areas that might not have the grocery stores that I'm looking for. I still try to see if I can get into some sort of grocery store and buy whatever is loose. So usually that's citrus and apples, and I'll get almond butter, peanut butter in a glass container if I run out of my bulk ones. If there's different options that you could do, you're definitely more limited in it. Like I don't shop for meat, I don't shop for cheese, anything like that. If we're doing family style with friends, I'll have it. But when I shop for myself, it's 100% vegan, which is a really nice balance for me. And And that also help, that also makes things limited, but all the cheese and meat is wrapped in plastic anyways,
is,
usually,
yeah.
especially at general grocery stores. So that's kind of a no-brainer to cut out. And sometimes I'll go like weeks without having bread because I couldn't find any bread that wasn't wrapped in plastic. You really are changing your diet. I'm driving at crazy hours of the night and for multiple days on end sometimes. And when you are in a pinch and no restaurants are open and there's no grocery stores nearby the highway, anything like that, my guilty pleasures, I would say, at gas stations and truck stops are getting either Subway because that comes wrapped in paper and I could compost it at the next time I have a compost facility available. So I'll hold on to that. But that's been a good way. And I just get a veggie sub there. I'm so embarrassed to say this, but the gas station pizza, because I could put a slice of pizza on the plate that's in my van. And
Yeah.
so there's no waste involved. And just to be like real with people, like you're not always going to have access to the healthiest options and you're going to have overnight driving trips. Then it's just, it's not real. But those are my two things, like when I'm in a pinch. And there's usually always a Subway or at least pizza at like the late night gas station or truck stops.
I want to talk a little bit about the events that you've worked, and have you seen a shift in behavior of attendees, or have attendees been more now receptive to the learning curve? And have you seen attendees kind of start to expect different receptacles and even just taking it upon themselves to learn about what's happening and so they can do their part and help?
Yeah, I would say they're still confused, but for the most part, people are way more receptive to the programs than they were in the past. I could always bet that at whatever event I was working, someone was purposely going to litter because their excuse was, oh, they pay people to do it. And that happened to me. And people even spoke to me about that multiple times at different events. And that just really sunk in with me is that people think that, oh, like I'm going to this event, I'm paying for it. I have the privilege to litter because they're paying other people to do it. And so when you have people thinking like that, that's a whole mind shift that has to go on, a switch has to occur. So you have to build this culture around sustainable events. It's not just about having the recycling and composting receptacles available. It's the messaging that goes along with it, the pre-messaging and the newsletters and the social media posts on the website, building this culture that, hey, when you're at this event, we really want you to also think about the impact that you're having. We know that music and festivals at this size do cause a lot of waste, and we're doing our best to reduce it, and we need your help to take it to the next level. And that's where like Friendly Gathering and a lot of my clients come in, and they've helped out so much with the messaging. Year after year, more attendees start to notice, and in the comments and the reviews on the festival websites or like the Facebook reviews, people are saying about how they really enjoyed being at an event that was clean and that we had green team members educating them. And there was educational signage, not just at the bins, but we have them around the whole event so that they're constantly reminded, like, hey, you could use your reusable cup. Or, hey, you could, your single-use cup is actually compostable. So throw it in there because it's not just enough to have the stations out because people forget. We're, to be quite honest, like we're dealing with people that are under the influence of many different things.
Yes.
So you have to make it like create a, the best thing I could say is that you have to create a whole culture around it because the signs are not enough.
Yeah, I read an article, this came out of Berkeley, about this student journalist went and interviewed the waste management facility. And in the article, it said that bioplastics, the compostable plastic, they'll say that they will process the quote unquote process everything, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it will end up where the consumer thinks it's going to end up, or the, you know, for all, you know, I'm sure that the waste management company wants it to be composted too, but these bioplastics are being marketed to us in ways where that not everything is lined up and the processes can't line up.
Bioplastic has been the newest hurdle for us. And I, like, at first when I was getting into this movement, when compostable products were kind of, they were newer, people were excited about them, but they were meant to be an alternative, not the solution to our single-use plastic consumption. And right now it's being served up as the solution, and that's not the case, because a single-use compostable cup is still plastic. It's just made, it's made differently. It's made from corn, typically, and depending on your stance on GMO and monocropping, that's what it's made out of. You're supporting that, and it takes more oil to produce a compostable cup too. Yeah, it could break down, but most compost facilities don't like getting them because they take longer to break down. They're not bringing any nutrients into their compost, and they can't resell the compost afterwards. We have so many deals with the compost facilities because we sort through everything twice for getting clean material. But we drop off the compost because we have to hand drop it off because compost facilities, the ones that we work with, are no longer hauling because of the high risk of contamination that people do. So we hand drop it off to them in a box truck, unload it there, and they put it in a totally different section of the compost facility where it'll break down and it'll turn into soil, but they're not reselling it. They'll like sell it to areas that aren't using it to grow their food. But it's definitely turned into more of a greenwashing thing. And I'm trying this year for 2020 to get most of the festivals that I'm working with, like phasing out more and more of the compostable plastics, just getting them out. Because we're here to like help the compost facilities, because it's not fair for them to feel the burden of all of the compostable products and the zero waste movement. Because zero waste does mean like all waste, not just compostable and not just landfill waste. Like compostable waste and recyclable waste is still waste in general. Like it's still resources being used to make stuff that's single use. So I really try to broadcast that with people because it's just not right how fast we're consuming it. It's not solving the issue of the single-use convenience lifestyle that people are just consuming things without thinking about them. It's really the reusable systems that we'll implement at the festivals that create the change that's getting people to think about holding on to the cup, holding on to the plate, holding on to the utensil throughout the day so that they're reducing their waste. So that way, in their everyday life outside of the festival, they start to form those habits at an event. And they can integrate into their everyday life and they leave with something extra instead of still like, oh, I'm going to drink this single-use cup and throw into the compost and then be on my way. Like we're not solving an issue there. And that's really where like I'm trying to lead my company to bridge that gap. It's like, yeah, like there's the waste management side of it, the waste diversion, but let's go in and let's start eliminating the waste first. Let's eliminate the single-use waste before it gets started. What stuff can we put bans on? What stuff can we eliminate? Like, do we really need this stuff to put on an event? Do we really need multiple bouquets of flowers? Can we just do a couple of flowers instead and still have an awesome centerpiece for the VIP or artist area? Then we have less waste to deal with afterwards. So all
Right.
these different ways to go and like building those strategies will really help get us there and then create the ripple effect after the event.
Just in terms of your impact personally and the impact that Waste Free Earth has had, have you been tracking that?
I definitely track it. Like Waste Free Earth has been a company for 2 years when I got it all official, but I've been doing this work for over half a decade. And I include that all in our stats
Okay.
because, you know, it is still a part of the company. We just didn't have an official name or anything like that just yet. But we're close to, I believe it's over half a million tons diverted away from the landfill. No, half a million pounds diverted away from the landfill and the composting, recycling, and donation programs.
That's awesome. So, what is next and upcoming for you and or for Waste Free Earth?
Well, for me, I am teaching more workshops on how to live waste free if you're around the Vermont area. That's my main passion is educating people on how to live more sustainable and waste-free lives. So I have a couple announcements coming up about some workshops I'll be hosting locally in the Burlington area. And if you aren't local, you could follow me on Instagram, sustainability.bosslady, where I post tons of tips on how to live a more waste-free type of lifestyle as well. And I do What Would Marina Do Wednesdays. So on Wednesdays, I jump on my Insta stories and people ask me questions. I'm like, what would Marina do if I was like faced with two options in terms of sustainability? So I get questions throughout the whole week. So I try to focus them all on Wednesdays. And for my company, it's awesome. I like love the education side of my job. It's my favorite part, hands down. And from a business standpoint, we are experts in the sustainable event industry. So we go into events and build custom strategies that help them lower their environmental impact and reduce their overall waste consumption. And that's where we're really starting to streamline is integrating the reusables, because as I was saying before, with the compostable products, that's not the answer. So we want to craft really hard reusable systems so that we aren't producing extra waste that's compostable or recyclable, because that's not the answer. And to help that out too, like, we've been doing weddings now, which is super exciting. People have been reaching out to us to have sustainable and waste-free weddings. We just did one a couple weeks ago. We produced 2 bags of landfill waste for the whole event. All the attendees got a free reusable cup that they used throughout the whole night. I believe we only used maybe a dozen cups, like single-use cups, when I was sorting through the trash.
Amazing.
It's great, and we had a wash station there, so it's completely compliant with health code. We had soap, rinse, and sanitation bin, and then people could dry them off, so it's completely health code compliant, so that we were able to have that reusable program go without having to wait to run the dishwasher for everything. So that was a nifty way, campground way, I should say, to do it.
Back to the roots.
Yeah, back to the roots where simple living came about. But yeah, it's really exciting for Race Free. We really want to be known as sustainable event planners and being hired on for events of all different sizes to direct them on a great road to sustainability. And we do festivals of all different sizes. If it's under 20,000 attendees, we'll take over the waste management as well and get like a whole team for that. But typically when it's above 20,000, there are some clients that we have above it. Usually they're 1 day events. If it's above 20,000, we typically contract out the waste management and have them follow our strategies, or we'll just consult on a certain area that they need help with. Whatever really works for the business or the event, we have slidable services and scalable budgets as well, depending on what they're working with.
Very last question of the interview. What is one action our listeners can take with them to be more sustainable in their daily lives today?
Inventory your waste. That is, and learn from it. Inventory your waste and learn from it. That's how I started my zero waste movement, is taking a look of everything that I was consuming. And that's when I was able to make change. Like, are you buying a lot of chip bags? Are you, like, my bad habit was granola bars. I am an avid hiker and outdoors person, so I thought I could not go hiking without having a granola bar. Turns out you can. There's tons of options instead. But if you want to live more zero waste, like, if you don't think that it's attainable for you now, just go home, like, write down. You don't have to collect everything in a mason jar or a bag. If you want to just start inventory, take a pen and a piece of paper and I produced this waste today, and then categorize it. Like, is it mainly plastic, paper, recyclable stuff? See what you're doing, and then you can make changes from that. And next time when you go grocery shopping, you could say, okay, I'm not going to buy the granola bars this time. I'm going to try to buy bulk trail mix instead, or I'm going to try to make some healthy snacks alternatives, or bring some nut butter and slices of apples with me next time I go hiking. But learning from your waste is a key step to reducing your waste. Yeah, it's helped me so much, because I'm a really big soft person. So I had a lot of condiments in the sauce department,
Yes.
and a lot of them came in plastic bottles. So
Yes,
once I got done with them, I had to stop buying them. Like, you don't have to inventory your waste right when you throw out. You could go home and inventory your kitchen. That was another big wake-up call for me. It was looking in my refrigerator and seeing the grapes in plastic bags and the cherries in plastic bags and all that stuff that now I don't eat because it only comes in plastic bags for me. But that's a great way to at least become aware of your actions and what you're consuming.
I love that. I'm going to inventory right now. I'm looking around my
Yes.
kitchen. So great chatting with you, Marina.
Thank you so much for having me. I feel very honored.
Thank you for being here. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you later.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Go Marina. One realization was all it took to pique her interest in what we buy and how we consume, and changed the way she thinks about food and resources for good. It has been a journey that stemmed from passion for the planet, which is now her business. She has used her voice to influence others around her and help them and their businesses be more sustainable too. Even though she has had to say no to some of her favorite food items like tortillas and pita chips, she is dedicated to being kind to the earth and living as low impact as she possibly can. Marina empowers us to inventory our waste, look at what we're throwing away, and learn to see if we can do something else with it before it goes to landfill. I've looked at my kitchen since this interview, and I still see so much plastic. Cheese is my guilty pleasure. There is more we can all do, so let's do one thing today to reduce our waste and our plastic consumption. Mine is not buying cheese this week. So, are you ready? Let's continue to break bad habits together. Thank you.